Spring football is in full swing, but is this a real reset or is the same spring hype? Because while football sells hope, basketball forces the question, did Iowa's run to the Elite Eight raise even more questions about the leadership of our team? And in a week where basketball left everyone sick, hockey reminded people what winning in Wisconsin really looks like. I'm Rajiv, he's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective. Woohoo! Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers on today's show. It starts with spring football, real intel from practice, real competition, and a program trying to prove that what we're seeing is more than just off-season optimism. Is this actually the beginning of a reset, or have we heard this before? Then we turn to basketball, where questions are getting louder. Wisconsin's early exit still lingers, and now with Iowa making a deep run under a first-year head coach, it forces a bigger conversation about expectations, ceilings, and where this what this program should be chasing in March. And we'll actually start. We were going to close, but we're going to start by talking about what's the brightest light in the program, Wisconsin hockey, a national championship on the women's side, and the men punching their ticket to the Frozen Four, and a reminder of what it looks like when Wisconsin is operating at a championship level. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Thank you for all the support of the show. That like button is super helpful. Commenting on the show, subscribe if you haven't already. Many of you listen to this who haven't subscribed, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate all the support of the show. I also want to say a quick thank you to many messages I received about my new baby that I had this past week, which is great. He is only a few days old, but nothing stops me from the Bucky Report on a Sunday night. He's downstairs and maybe you'll hear him cry, but we'll see. So that's really exciting. So thank you to many good messages I had about that. Also, Rajiv's Corner is returning this week, so check that out on the podcast platform. Justin, we don't have a lot to celebrate these days, but we do in the world of hockey, man. First of all, how you doing? It's nice to see us win a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing about this is somebody who's not a big hockey fan, and you and I are both in soccer. You start following this and you follow hockey and soccer both have the type of fans where if there's not an instant fix with a coach, people lose their minds and are like, we got to move on. They're not good, or they don't fit for this level. And I heard that with people with Hastings after like the first couple of years, like, I don't know if he's the right guy. And it's like, he's been here. Like, he had to completely redo the roster and he's had like success everywhere he's been but here, but in a very different style than the previous coach had. You have to give him some time to like get things put in place. Hockey's a little different than football.
Yeah, he was getting some shade. But you know, look, and listen, we've said this on the show before, we'll say it again. We don't cover this sport enough. We don't talk about it enough. I don't watch enough of it. I do watch the tournament and I did watch it. Obviously the game yesterday was fantastic. The overtime win, which we're going to talk about. And next year, like, I want to commit, Justin, to covering this a little bit more. And we're going to talk volleyball more this year. We definitely need to talk hockey because these guys deserve it. Like, congratulations to the Wisconsin women's hockey team who have won their ninth, not one, not first, not second, not third, not anything in between. Ninth national title, pretty much the most dominant program in probably any singular sport in college sports. Honestly, they beat Ohio State 3-2. Claire Enright got the winner, and Ava McNaughton, an unbelievable performance from her, named the tournament's most outstanding player. You know, look, Wisconsin and Ohio State have played in the national title game the last 5 years. It's pretty much these two programs, and they've traded off, you know, a lot of the times, but Wisconsin getting it done is great, man. It's really nice to have a national title. And I know that, again, it's not a sport that we cover, and maybe you're not a women's hockey fan, but we have to just give it up to these women for winning another title, bringing another national title to our school. It's fantastic.
Well, none of that. Yeah. I mean, anyone, and I did follow the men's team a little bit. It feels like that's a team that's kind of growing. He's clearly molding that team, because they had times during the season where they looked dominant and they had times where they were just really struggling or sloppy, but they also had a lot of guys that ended up playing in international during the breaks for the like under 20 leagues and stuff like that. And it threw a wrench in some of the things for them. They got it back at the together at the end, and both Michigan and Michigan State, they played very well against this season. And if that's any indication, they're going to have a real opportunity here to have a shot. Like, there are teams that are going, like the other teams are probably going to be favored against them, but I don't think it would be a massive upset for them to beat any of these teams in the Frozen Four. Especially if they're playing the way they're capable of, they're borderline dominant when their defense is really clicking.
Yeah. No doubt. And that game was incredible yesterday, but I just got to give it up for these women again. Just so proud of them. I mean, listen, we talk about the volleyball program a lot and how great they are, but this women's hockey team is just so dominant. Like, you know, and we talk about, you just brought up beating these teams for the men into the Frozen Four and what we've done against Michigan and Michigan State this year. Our basketball team's done that too. But then when it mattered, they didn't happen. It didn't happen. But that's what's great about these guys. That's why they deserve flowers, because we talk so much on the show about basketball and football, rightfully so. That's the sports that we follow the most, that we like the most. And those guys are struggling right now, especially in come tournament time, especially the basketball team, but that's not the case for hockey. And it was great. The men's hockey team, I mean, the comeback was real, man. They were 5 minutes to go in the game. They're down 3-1. They tie it up two goals in 34 seconds. Unbelievable. It then goes to overtime. And then, you know, of course,
26 seconds. Yeah.
26 seconds into overtime. Brian Posick on the call covering Badger hockey.
Up the Badgers hold the zone. Dexheimer shoots one back. Yeah. Score! Badgers score! Big Dexheimer from out high right and skipped off traffic past Trey Augustine. Oh, I can't believe this. It feels so good to finally see it again. Wisconsin is going to the Frozen Four. The Badgers just knocked out the Big Ten champions, and now they'll take their chances in Las Vegas.
And take their chances in Las Vegas, they will. The Badger men's hockey team is heading.
You going to go to that?
To my hometown. Oh, yes. So here's the thing. It's kind of a bummer, actually. I have a work trip in the middle of my paternity leave to Seattle. The 7th through the 9th. And why they're not playing this next weekend, I don't know. They're avoiding their conflict with basketball, whatever. But they don't seem to be 2 weeks before a Frozen Four. Nonetheless, it's happening the day I fly back. I don't land in Vegas until the evening. If they would have played the second game, I would consider changing my flight. But I can't possibly get back for the 2 p.m. Pacific time puck drop in that game. So I will not be there for the first game. If the Badgers sneak by North Dakota and have another big upset, I will 100% be in attendance at T-Mobile Arena for the national title game. 100%. I'm really bummed that I can't go. This trip was already well planned in advance, and it stinks, man, because that's awesome, dude. That game was super exciting. Michigan State is definitely the better team. Going into overtime, it's like, you know, you just put the puck on the net. It happened 20 seconds in, man. Like, we've had Ben Dexheimer, all Big Ten, first team all Big Ten, the best defender probably in the conference. He gets the goal, dude. What a great game, man. That was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say on it. Like, this, it's the first time in 16 years the Badgers are back in the Frozen Four. Hopefully they can get this one done, or at least, you know, well, I mean, they've already gone beyond what people expected, which I think we're all happy to see them get back into postseason hockey, but to win a couple of big games, especially take out a top seed in Michigan State, is incredible to see them do it. And that's not a shock. They played really well against Michigan State during the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, congrats again to both hockey teams, both women's from winning the national title and men for making the Frozen Four, which we'll cover, of course, in a couple of weeks. Hopefully we can get another national title, which will be pretty fantastic to win both of those. But of course, our big topic of the day is spring football. We are loving that. We're a few practices in now to spring. Hopefully you've had a chance to read all the good stuff. Listen, Nick's doing fantastic stuff. Payne, John McNamara over at 247, whether you're an On3 guy, wherever you get your Badger content, as far as live reporting, even from Ryan, who's been to a couple practices, I hope you've had a chance to listen to all that. We're going to kind of talk offense, and we're going to talk defense and different position groups and things that Justin has heard. We're going to hear a little bit of Jeff Grimes' press conference where he talks about something pretty interesting that I thought. But Justin, let's just start off with you here. Early vibes. Like, what are your, you know, you're obviously soaking up all this information. Like, just before we get into the position groups themselves, what's your overall takeaway so far from what we've heard out of spring practice?
My gut feeling based off of what I've heard, I feel pretty good about the defense. I think it's going to be a pretty salty defense this year. I think we're going to be able to pressure the offense. And I think that the secondary is going to be a step up from where it was last year. On the offensive side of the ball, I'm still cautiously optimistic. I'm a little apprehensive as to what to expect at this point. I think I'm going to honestly be that way unless we start hearing glowing practice reports every day about how, you know, Colton Joseph is going out there and absolutely torching the defense, which then I think would obviously flip it and we'd be worried about the defense. But until we hear that the offense is consistently putting pressure on the defense in practice, I'm a little concerned about heading into the season. I think we'll be okay, but it's just been so rough the last 3 years that I'm just not ready to say until I see quality offense that it's there.
Yeah. Like, my thing with spring practice is that you got to work through these kinks, right? And Jeff Grimes said as much as press conference,
yeah, like, very early.
You have to make these throws to know that you can't make those throws. If that makes sense, right? You're going to have to throw picks to realize when you run a certain play, hey, that guy's not open there. I think he mentioned something like throwing across the field to the flat or whatever. Like, you can't make those throws. So if you make them in practice, you throw those picks. You look on paper, you see, oh, gee, Colton Joseph threw 3 picks today. Like, that's horrible. He might not be good. But they're figuring out this new offense. And there's a ton of new guys, new players. I mean, look, we're going to have another new look offensive line, which we're going to talk about. But like, that obviously matters. But I think just in the QB room, which is where I kind of want to start here, is like, I think there's a lot of athleticism. I think there's Deuce Adams looks like he's going to be a guy that can adequately back up Colton Joseph, but also Ryan Hopkins has been getting a little buzz as a guy that might potentially jump Carter Smith. Like, he's a guy that all we've heard is that, you know, Jeff Grimes even said it, that he's playing really well. He's very locked in mentally. He's super fast. And I've seen him play in person. He's very accurate. He's very athletic. I like him. And I think he could surpass Carter Smith as QB3, which then probably means one of those guys leaves, obviously, whoever loses that battle. Mm-hmm. But how are you feeling about the QB room now? I mean, I know you mentioned that, like, you're not seeing the offense click, which, does that really bother you in the spring? And are you feeling pretty good about where this?
No, it's just more right that I'm not willing to say that I feel comfortable with where we're going to be during the season. I do think the quarterback room is stronger overall than it's ever been during Fickell's time here. I like Deuce Adams coming into the spring. I thought he'd be the number two quarterback just based off of the little bit of film that was out there and watching him run the offense at Louisville, where I felt really comfortable saying, like, hey, another year, he probably would have been ready to go. I think Joseph will get it together. I think he's got a lot of time, and they're honestly, none of this is real offense at this point. You're not setting up plays by running certain things and stuff like that. It's really run this play and then trying to see, you know, how people are performing during it, maybe running it again. It's just not like they're like a game plan like you'd actually be putting together for a real game. So it's really hard to look at that and say take much away from it. However, I will also say you really would rather hear positive remarks coming out no matter what.
Okay.
We want to hear that this is clicking. It's not a shock to me in the least that it's not totally clicking yet. I felt like there'd be a lot of growth because I think there's so many more moving new pieces in this that it doesn't shock me at all. Hopkins, I am very surprised and happy to hear. It's performed really well. I like hearing that he's ahead of the curve of a normal freshman, especially with his physical tools. I think that's a massive deal. If it's not mentally daunting to him, that's a big deal for Wisconsin, that he is eating it up and ready to continue to go. Because by the time we hit fall, like, his growth is going to just skyrocket. So he's going to be a guy that really takes leaps and bounds going in through the summer into the fall, where I don't think you'll ever see him move further than third, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him really starting to push the other guys coming into next year if he's already starting to look competent now.
I'm, for one, I'm not surprised. You don't play at modern day and play as well as he did against some of the best competition in the country without being like a really skilled quarterback, athlete, you know, mentally there. I'm not surprised by it at all. Raul Correa says, I don't doubt it. Carter Smith was really small. When I first saw him play last year, I didn't expect him to be that undersized. My biggest issue with Carter Smith is I just didn't think he threw the ball very well, like at any point. Like he just, you know, when I saw, now again, I understand he played in the Big Ten and I saw Hopkins play in high school, but I just, you see that there's a moxie. There's like a sort of confidence in the pocket that you could just deliver the ball where it needs to go. And we never saw that in Carter Smith. Now, listen, he was put in a rough situation and kudos to him. Correct. But, you know, like it's still what it is. You said something that I wanted to ask you about. You said that you feel like this is the best quarterback room that Fickell's had, which I agree with you on. But what did you think coming into the last two seasons? Like, were you as confident about, like, in the spring?
No.
Like with Tyler Van Dyke even?
I was not super high on the Tyler Van Dyke. I was hopeful. Like, I knew that some of his highlights gave you some hopeful optimism that he would figure out how to be a positive impact at the quarterback position. Backup, I never felt like last year, I never was not in love with Danny O'Neill. I never totally bought into that one. I liked the fact that he had experience, but I always thought he was undersized. I didn't see the arm strength there. And this is not me, you know, trying to bag on him, but I just felt like he was limited in terms of what he had to offer. I think from a physical tool standpoint, this entire room is, everyone's about the height you'd want them to be. They're all like 6'2", 6'3". They all have good weight on. The arm strength is there for everyone. Carter's even got a decent arm. It's just, we don't always know where it's going. And mentally, like I said, I felt Deuce Adams was going to be a guy who was going to be ready to be a strong backup coming into this season. Like, I just liked what he put on film in the one game that he did start. Carter, I felt like, had a big leap that he had to make coming into this. I didn't expect much from Hopkins at all, but the fact that he's pushing and the fact that he doesn't look overwhelmed, it just gives me a level of comfort knowing that, like, you have these athletes that are there that don't look like they're going to be physically overwhelmed and also don't look like they're necessarily going to be mentally. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we're going to have like incredible quarterback play, but I think the baseline that we're setting here is we can at least get solid quarterback play, hopefully, for the team.
And we desperately need it because this team has been lacking severely good, solid quarterback play. Zach Bard says, just hope they can stay healthy. Obviously, we've had three seasons of really bad quarterback play. Now, there's a lot of talk about how mobile these guys are. Jesse Temple actually asked Jeff Grimes this question about how he is going to strike a balance between running these quarterbacks and using their athleticism and also keeping them healthy given the physicality of the Big Ten. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
Yeah, well, I think if you make the decision to go and recruit athletic quarterbacks, which we have, all the guys that we have now are guys that can run, whether you're talking about Colton or the other guys, when you make that decision to go that direction, then that's a part of your game. And you have to be willing to live with the fact that they are going to be exposed to contact a little bit more maybe than a guy that's not in that position. How much you do that and how often you do that, I think, depends on the quarterback himself. Some guys are a little bit more durable than others. Some guys have the elusiveness to get out in the open field and just, you know, they seem to never take a head-on shot. You know, they find a way to just make a guy miss and get out of bounds. And, you know, so being able to do things where we can protect them with the sideline and give them the opportunity to get out of bounds, or running them in the red zone where they have an opportunity to get a touchdown and hand the ball to the ref and maybe risk a little bit less exposure there, I think are a couple ways that you can do that. But yeah, they're going to get hit more, and that's something that we understand and are willing to live with. But I think to run the quarterback as much as you would a running back is not what any of us want.
Justin, how much do you think we're going to actually use these guys in the run? Like, do you think you're going to be angry at how much we use him, and how concerned are you about, like, us actually having another problem like this. Like, we do have to guard against this a little bit, right? Like, we can't just continue to expose our quarterbacks.
I think what we're going to be looking at here is something in the realm of 10 carries a game. And that could be a combination of scrambles and actual designed runs. But at Kansas, he never was like running Jalen Daniels like constantly. He would have some designed runs, like a quarterback sweep and stuff like that, that he would run through them. But I don't see this being like, we're going to run. Like, I think people are getting way too hung up on watching Carter Smith run the ball 18 times against, what was that, against Washington?
He ran a lot, yeah. Because he couldn't pass. He wasn't in
the passing. That's exactly the difference. And that's why you're doing it, is you have somebody who don't trust mentally to be able to make the right reads and to make the right throws. And because of that, you're leaning on the stuff that you know that he's capable of doing. Colton Joseph, if we're at that point where we don't think he can throw, then he shouldn't be the starting quarterback. Like, you need to figure out who's capable of making plays. And I think that he's well beyond that from a developmental standpoint. I think he will be fine by the time the season comes along. Like, there's people that I've heard talk about him as a game manager. I don't see that with him. I think that you bring in a quarterback like this because you think he can be dynamic. What I do think you're going to have issues with Colton Joseph is he could be very boom bust coming to the season. We may have games where he goes off, and we may have games where it's like he just seems like he's kind of stuck in neutral and we can't get the offense rolling because he's just not necessarily overly effective throwing the ball, or teams are really, you know, coming after him on or putting a defender on him in the run game. So we'll see what happens there, but I do think that 10 is probably the number that I would lean on. And like I said, that's between scrambles and design runs. I'll be shocked if he's more than like 6 or 7 designed runs a game. I feel like that's even a fairly high number. And it feels like it's going to be more situationally trying to catch the defense off guard than doing a ton of stuff.
Dude, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't freaked out about this. Like, I'm really happy that he's a mobile quarterback and his legs are a massive attribute to him. And I understand that. But you heard me say, like, at the end of last season, I wanted a guy that we could rely on passing the ball, because I don't want someone that has, like, the main strength is, you know, can he use his legs? Now, we know that Colton Joseph can throw the ball. There's some issues here and there, but he has that ability. And I hope that Grimes can design the system. But yeah, if Grimes is going to run him 12 to 15 times a game, forget about it. Just forget about it. He's going to get injured. And he could get injured running 3 times a game. But I really hope that they are factoring this kind of stuff in. Now, obviously, they got Deuce Adams. They have Ryan Hopkins. They have Carter Smith. Like, there's depth there a little bit. But I don't know, man. It's concerning to me overall. But probably what most concerns me, which leads into our next discussion, is, are we going to be able to block effectively for him? Because the offensive line has been another topic of discussion inside this spring camp. Jeff Grimes was asked about this, of course, mentioned Mateos as being a really good teacher of the game, and he feels really comfortable. They've worked together many times in the past. He was asked about Wilkins playing left tackle, Haywood playing right tackle, and he just said they're experimenting, which is no surprise to anyone. They're experimenting back and forth. I continue to be concerned about this, but like, how are you feeling now? Just 4 or 5 practices in. Are you still concerned? Is this a major issue for you like it is for me?
I'm sitting back and watching it because we haven't even had full pads on yet. So taking anything away from how the line looks in these practices to me is kind of like, I don't even know what we're looking at right now. Like, this isn't real. Like, if I hear in a scrimmage that he looked poor, it will make me a little bit more concerned. We have yet to have a scrimmage period where this has happened. I'm not necessarily concerned with any of the offensive linemen up to this point. We have not heard the type of rumblings like Heinzen last year where it's like he's just getting crushed whenever we do reps. And that was so Wilkins seems like he's been pretty solid. In fact, he's gotten some positive buzz from Evan Flood. I think that I trust Haywood's going to be good. And I think in the interior of the line, I think we have some at least reasonable options for what we want to do. Now, I do also think that the defense may just be a pretty good defense this year, and that when you're figuring that out on offense, when your timing's not exactly locked in yet, because let's be honest, the one thing that has to happen is these guys need to get in lockstep with their timing on everything if we want plays to work correctly. And that's going to take time. So I think offensively, the offensive line, I feel okay about. I'll feel a lot better if we start hearing some positive things about the run game going late into the spring. But I do think it will be solid by the time the season goes. I really trust Mateos to figure this out. He seems to have a good feel on these things. I haven't heard of anyone who's just been an absolute train wreck. And quite honestly, there's been times where we've heard that the offensive line's blocked really well. A couple of those design QB runs that they busted for touchdowns in the red zone. Listen, if that's something that we can put in as a weapon, I'm all for it. You have the quarterbacks that if you can get them clean around the edge, all of them are capable of scoring.
Yeah, I mean, I think what gives me hope here is Mateos and that, you know, like he seems to be like, I agree. Like we've heard good reports of the blocking well. I think the interior of the line, I'm not really worried about much at all because, you know, like Kuecky, obviously we know Mandel moving to guard. That's a good positive thing. You know, Cubberly there, we've got Cherry in there. We've got a lot of guys who I feel like can do well. My issues of tackle, it's been like that. It's going to continue to be like that. Is Haywood right at right tackle? Should be in left. Is Wilkins good enough? And if one of those guys goes down, are we okay with Simmons? Are we going to Roski? Like
that's where I would have more of a concern. And I don't know if we're going to know that until the end of fall camp.
And there's
those guys are going to have to get comfortable.
Yeah. And there's no portal now. There's no second portal here that we can go nab a couple linemen up. We can go pick someone up potentially that's in the portal still, but you know, we're not going to get anybody who they're not happy with their time at their spring camp. They're going to come to us, i.e. Davis Heinzen or something like that. But we're not getting that. So I still think we didn't quite do enough. But it concerns me. But nonetheless, that's, you know, the offense. Anything else on the offense? We heard some good stuff about the running backs. Abu Sama is getting a lot of buzz. Any other notes on the offense?
Jackson's been pretty good so far. So I'm very intrigued by him. He's listed on the roster as 240. And they've shown him a couple of times in some of the clips that have come out. And I'm like, man, he doesn't look that big. Like he actually has a pretty well put together body where you're not like he doesn't look heavy. And if that's the case, I'm all for it. Having a big power back would be great. We haven't had one in a while. And I'd like to have somebody that can come downhill and just kind of, you know, bash into people.
Yeah. Agree on that. No, nothing really to add. Couple other notes. Chris Brooks, Tyrell Henry, getting some comments about leadership, which I think is really nice to see. Chris Brooks is a guy that has been around the program a long time. I think he's a talented receiver that could hopefully provide some veteran leadership in that room. And I think that's what we're getting from that. That to me is really nice to see. I think that's great. Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball, which of course is getting a bit more buzz. So far, Mike Tressel did his press conference this week. It talked a lot about sort of speed, confidence, the aggression that's being played with, especially with the DB room itself. He talked about pass rush as well. Let's start with the defensive backs, the cornerbacks. Like, just it looks like these guys are really going to be these guys could be the real deal with Robinson and Fletcher, West, Bates. I mean, in the safeties of Burks and Van Dinter. Van Dinter's getting a lot of buzz. Like, I'm starting to feel pretty good about what we've got on the back end of this defense. And I continue to trust Tressel more and more each year, especially after what he did last year for us. I'm fine with him being there. And I think if you give him more time and the athletes that he's really wanting, like, I'm feeling pretty good about what he's able to do back there.
Yeah, I think this is the most athletic secondary room we've had in God knows how long, probably dating back to Barry. Like, I don't know if we've had this type of size and athleticism in the secondary. Even Barry's didn't have like super big corners. Like you have guys that are like legitimately over 6 foot who can run and can be physical. And you have a really nice player in West playing in the slot who's likely to, you know, lock down that spot. And that's not even talking about some of the young guys that you have. And you have Jameer Scott, who is a guy who's internal, who's had a really good camp so far. And he might get himself into the mix. Like there's going to be quality depth in that room, it feels like, to at least probably through the two deep. I'm not sure how much we'll be able to withstand some injuries. But a guy like Fletcher, who's dinged up right now, like he's got a bum shoulder. I'm not even sure that like that might be enough for him to not be like able to win the job. Like people are playing that well that you probably right now, the top three guys that you're looking at are Robinson, Bates, and Jameer Scott. And Fletcher's kind of in that next group because he's not able to play at full speed yet.
Yeah, it's really good to hear what we've heard about Jahmyr Scott. You know, there's a guy that we recruited. It's nice to see that. Tressel had a lot of nice things to say about him. He also had nice things to say about the backup inside linebackers. Obviously, we know about the starters. Post and Catalano is what it is. But he mentioned a lot of good things about John Kamara and Tommy Heiberger, of course, who's moved out from, you know, from the outside into the inside. And he mentioned, you know, like iron sharpens iron, and we need these guys to be pushed a little bit. So I think that's really exciting to see. Obviously, we know what's good at the top, but I'm always concerned about if you lose your first guy to injury, which is going to happen in football. It's going to happen. You got to have quality backups who can fill the gaps and be serviceable when our guys go down. And I think John Kamara was a really good pickup. Obviously, Tommy Heiberger's been with the program for a while. He looks to be a good – he was someone we were excited about when he was recruited. So clearly, like, you know, he's got the pedigree that we were looking for as fans. But that's nice to see on that inside linebacker group. And I think that I'm feeling pretty good about that. Obviously, the top guys are there, but the depth is the real question mark in the storyline. And it looks like those guys are beginning to really show out.
Yeah, I mean, and just to jump back a little bit, we talked about corner. Safety is a position that I expect to take a leap this year. I think that Burks gives you a nice baseline as having a stud starter that you feel confident in. Then Dinter is expected to be in that rotation. Like, he's a guy that they really like that's gotten there. And you have some young bodies that are showing some things too. But I think you have three safeties right now that you probably feel pretty good of in Young, Burks, and in Van Dinter. That gives you a start to go with where you at least feel like we've got some bodies here. And if we can get a couple of these young guys to kind of close in on that group, we feel really good about the depth we have in that safety room. And I actually think that's probably where we're going to end up by the time the season starts. I don't know how much the young guys are going to play, but I do think that they're going to get the opportunity to probably provide some quality reps here and there.
Michael Gardner comment, which I think is pretty funny, but it's never too early to talk about this. Am I in the minority in thinking we might win 8 to 9 games? Probably. I think you'd be in the minority, Michael. I mean, I think that we're always going to, this is the season of hope. This is when you get to think that this is going to happen. I understand that. I think 7 is basically the minimum. So no, I don't think you're crazy for thinking 8, because 7 is like, you almost need 7 with this team.
Yeah. My way of phrasing this has been pretty simple. I'm like, I'm at 7-5 right now, but that's because I haven't seen the offense. Like, if this offense is a 25 point per game offense, I think 8 or 9 is in play. But I need to see them like look like they can actually score on some of the teams. This schedule sets up. If this was a good Badger team, we'd be talking about 10 wins, maybe even 11.
About walking into the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just not what we've seen. So until we have that, it's really hard to look at it that way. But there's not a game on here other than Notre Dame that I look at and I'm like, this is a good Badger team that we couldn't win this game. Notre Dame, even, you'd be like, we'd be looking at that and saying, well, maybe if things break right for us, we got a chance in that. Right now, we're not at that point. But there's a lot of other games that I look at on the schedule and I'm like, yeah, they may be favored, but it's like, if Wisconsin wins, it's not really a shock. Especially, like, we're going to find out very quickly how much the portal helped this team. This is the best roster we've had since Fickell has been here, where I look at it and say these pieces all make sense. And now we just need to see it actually function on the field when it gets out there.
Yeah, look, I think it's well said. And this is how I look at this team right now. We had a lot of guys that we were excited about. Think back to like the Amari Snowdens of the world and so on and so forth. And the great, you know, what is that guy, that other safety back there, Braylon Moore, maybe. A lot of those guys, Skylar Bell, these people, they ended up making it in at lesser programs, right? They made it in the MAC and other programs. I feel like this year we've got Big Ten players on our team. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the number one difference. We had a bunch of MAC players before that were disguised in the Big Ten, and now they're going to the MAC. But we look like, especially in that cornerback room, in the inside linebackers, pass rush, even quarterback, like, it looks like we've got players. Maybe receiver is the question mark there. Running back, we certainly have it. O-line, maybe. But you've got Big Ten athletes now. You've got players you're like, yeah, I feel like these guys can win in the conference. They're not just MAC players disguised in the Big Ten. And that's why I think you have that positivity there.
What is your position that you're most concerned with right now?
Offensive line, and it's not close.
Okay.
I mean, I hear the receiver talk. I understand people are concerned about that. I'm not concerned about too much on the defense. Interior, I am a little bit, but I'm slowly moving towards your side of the planet there. But no one is going to convince me, no one, that we have enough depth on the O-line. After what I saw last year in the Davis-Hinton debacle and the fall camp issues, like, I need to see a Jeff Grimes offensive line play like a good old Bob Bostad offensive line in the day, or some kind of like Wisconsin quality line, because that was unacceptable line play from this team. And I'm very scared that it will happen again if someone goes down.
I feel like I agree with you on offensive line to a degree. For me, it's wide receiver, just because there are pieces on the offensive line that I know are going to be starters and probably provide starter level play. I don't know what to make of wide receiver at all. There's no, like, I have no idea who's going to get me 35 to 40 catches. There's going to probably be two guys that do it. I don't know who that's going to be. Like, do you have any clue who we can lean on right now? Like, we would probably say that we think that it's going to be Hilton, maybe somebody else, because he's got time in the offense already. Maybe a guy like Shamar Rigby.
Rigby. Chris Brooks.
I don't think I can see him getting that many catches. He's more like a 10-catch guy.
But listen, it's one of those things where it's like wide receiver by committee. I mean, I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying you can't be great if you don't have a solid wide receiving core. But with our schedule, as you mentioned before, our schedule sets up like nicely. To me, nothing happens at the O-line. And many people in the comments have said it, and they're totally fair. Right.
If we can't run the football this year, we're done.
Right. And like, and many people have said in the comments, totally true. Kicker. My God. Like, what in the hell are we going to, who the hell is going to kick field goals for this team? Like, if you're going to win close games, you have to make your kicks. And buddy, like, I don't know where I see any positivity coming from the kicking side of the world.
He's been doing a long camp so far.
Okay. Well, it's not the game.
I think the question we have to ask is, was he kept out last year simply because they wanted to redshirt him and didn't want to ruin what they had set in place for this season?
Yeah.
Like they viewed last year, like, what difference does it make having, like, swapping this here? Because he's not going to be the difference in a game. Because most of the games where we played good teams, we just got our butts kicked. So why even bother swapping him out? Because we don't feel we're competitive enough offensively to waste time thinking about a kicker. Which is both good and bad. Like, you want them to be as competitive as possible no matter what, but I can also see the logic maybe where you look at it and be like, this season's just a train wreck. Swapping a kicker isn't going to make a difference, and then we're just throwing his eligibility out the window.
I don't know, man. Like, those points are valuable.
I mean, I don't disagree.
If you're going to win any close games, you got to have it. So we'll see. Listen, we'll see. He could be great, and hopefully he is. But it's, you know, staying on the defense, pass rush. We've heard guys like Jalen Williams. We've heard good things from guys like Nick Clayton. Certainly heard good things about guys like Sebastian Cheeks, which are really good. What stands out to you in this room? How do you feel about the youth? And is this the Clayton breakout year? Is that what you're predicting?
Fearbreeze on some things too, but yeah, I think it's going to be a Clayton year. I will be shocked. I just think, to me, he's got all the inklings of being a guy who's like, he's going to play 2 years here and then he's going to be going pro. Like, there's that level of athleticism. I think he's a guy who's putting the work in. And I just think that he's capable of, like, you have guys that have the level of athleticism where it doesn't, like, the intellect of their game, like, know-how is not necessarily contingent on them being successful. Clayton is one of those guys, and I actually think that he's got pretty good instincts, but he's one of those guys that's just so gifted in terms of what he can do athletically that I think tackles are just going to have fits with him. And Cheeks has some of it too. Like, Cheeks doesn't have the length that a guy like Clayton does, but he's got the burst where he comes off the edge and he's just a missile. Like, I remember games late last year where you'd see times where I'm watching Reiger get into the backfield and all of a sudden you see Cheeks just come flying in off the other side. And I'm like, what the heck happened? Like, he just abused whoever was there because the quarterback's running up into Reiger. Yeah, I think that we're looking at this where you have guys where it's going to look good. I don't know what to expect from Williams yet. I'll be a little surprised if he's – getting a ton of reps, but I do think these guys are hits. I think next year is probably the year where you look at Williams and you're like, hey, this is a breakout. Suddenly he has like 5 or 6 sacks and you feel really good about him. But he, there's nobody that's transformed their body more than Jalen Williams coming into this year. His photo from last year and this year is night and day. He put on about 35 pounds of good weight getting ready for this year. So from a strength standpoint, he was already a really gifted athlete coming out of high school. He's a guy who now has some of the tools to be able to stand up to when somebody gets their hands on him.
Yeah. My thoughts on the pass rush, I'm feeling cautiously optimistic, honestly, about this group. I think that what I expect from Cheeks is what we saw. Like, I think, listen, Darrell Peterson had a really good year last year. He was a very reliable player that we were questioning the year before. I expect Cheeks to be a guy that we're like, yeah, he's one of the best. He's one of the best pass rushers we have.
I agree. Potentially with you. Roughly the same numbers, 5.5, yeah. 6 sacks. I think that's sure. About right for him.
For sure. I mean, I think we're going to get some good numbers. Obviously, I think Posa is going to be involved in that as well. From the inside linebacking,
4.5 or whatever last year, and limited time,
3.5 like maybe. That. I don't know, but either way, it was very good. But yeah, I do expect Fearbury and Cheeks to really be dominant there. As long as we can take jumps, and listen, Mike Tressel said that. He said his guys are taking jumps. He brought up on the interior line. He brought up Junior Poyser, your guy. And he kind of, you know, he said Aaron Witt is another guy, by the way, who just never seems to be gone. He's just like the perennial Badger, and in whatever position they want to put him in, Aaron Witt's going to play a role on this team. I do feel pretty comfortable with where we are defensively for the most part. Michael Gardner says Danitz is going to be interesting to see if he even sees the field. What do you think about Liam Danitz seeing the field?
I think there's nobody who needed like winter conditioning more than him. He's a guy who, when I watched his film, it's clear that he has been at a Division III strength and conditioning program, and it's clear that he needed to clean some things up from a technique standpoint. There's some great physical tools there. He probably needed 20 pounds of muscle to put on the upper half of his body, because the tackles at the Big Ten level are going to feast on him if he can't physically push back a little bit, bending the edge. And I really question his flexibility and ability to do that. It doesn't mean he can't. He's got top end burst. The guy can really come off the edge, but you can't just run in a straight line off the edge. Like, tackles will get a hand on you if you're not capable of bending and flexing a little bit around to round off. And I don't know if he can do that. That's something we've seen from some of these other guys. I know Cheeks can do it a little bit. I know Clayton can do it a ton. He's got a jab step that just makes tackles kind of head spin when he does it. His speed's a real problem. I don't know if Danitz has a lot of move, counter move type of stuff in his toolbox, because I don't think he had to do any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, it's good to have as a depth piece more than anything else. I think Danitz can do that.
You want more athletes than less.
Right. And he had the production, and whatever level of football you play at, that kind of production is still pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Any other notes from you, Justin, on spring practice you wanted to touch on before we move on a little bit?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a week break here. This is where we're going to really see the run here for the offense. We need to see them start stacking some days where it's like, yeah, they were pretty solid. You know, it doesn't need to be spectacular. They don't need to be carving up the defense. But I want to hear that it looks coherent and that it looks like they're getting more comfortable, and if they're able to put together, like, there's going to be move the ball periods. I want to hear that Colton Joseph has them effectively moving the ball to a degree where it's like, okay, we can see how this is going to translate into the season.
Yeah, that's definitely going to have to be the next thing that we hear of, is this offense performing, in which, again, it's not surprising at all that the early practices, they look bad. It's going to look bad. I think Jeff Graham said it well. They need to throw those balls to make sure to know that they can't. They need to test things. They need to do things. And it's fine that they're throwing picks. This is not the game, and it's not late spring practice. It's not the spring game. If you see 4 picks in the spring game like we did against Tanner Mordecai, that's a bit alarming. But that's not what this is. It's certainly not fall camp. Some positive news on the. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other part of that is that it gives them film to teach with too. Like, when you have a guy like Joseph who makes a bad read on a play, they're going to be able to go back to it after practice and say, yeah, you looked here, but that wasn't where you should have been looking. Like, your eyes were in the wrong spot. You should have been looking at this spot based off what the defense was showing you. So that's something for him to look at the next time when he sees that, that hopefully he can correct and make the correct read and go in the right spot. Michael Gardner here bringing up the tight ends. That's something we haven't talked about yet. That might be probably the position group we feel strongest about right now, other than maybe running back. I think you feel best about Abu Samah, but I think in terms of depth, we probably feel best about tight end. Like, there's legitimately, four bodies in that room we probably feel pretty good about. Steck, Harris, Schweinemann, and Bork. I think every one of those guys we're comfortable with going out on the field.
I agree with you on that. I'm not necessarily sure I feel good about the top end of that group. Like, how dominant, like, is Jacob Harris going to be the really guy? I think
he has been good.
And I agree with that. I think the room has depth. Yes. I'm not worried about the depth in that room. I'm just worried about how good the best tight end is going to be in that group. If it's Harris, then, and if he has a great season, that's fine. But are we going to have like a standout tight end? Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, and he might have to be the top receiver on this team. So that's going to be the case, because we don't know what we're going to have yet. Like, the highest receiver might have 30 catches. Obviously, we'd like it to be more than that. But would it shock you if somebody has 35 catches for 500 yards this season?
Yeah, I mean,
especially if they're spreading the ball around. Like, it, so much is going to matter. Like, and this is one of the things that we haven't seen a ton of yet, is can Joseph get comfortable with the deep ball where he's developed some consistency? I think there's some guys that can get deep in this room, but until we see him consistently being able to hit that pass, you're going to be working 20 yards or less in most of your throws.
And that's one of the reasons that I'm not as concerned about the wide receiver room as many people are, because I think we've got a decent group, and I don't know how much we're going to need to rely on them to be like the premier sort of, you know, ball movers, if you will, in this group. The positive thing I wanted to talk about was, of course, our new recruit in the 2027 class. That is 315-pound composite 4-star offensive tackle Cole Reeder out of Germantown, Wisconsin. This is a guy I know you like, Justin. 4-star guy, composite, 91, I believe, on 247, 92, a composite. What are your thoughts on Cole Reeder? Are you pretty excited about this one?
I think he moves really well for a big guy. I think that when you watch his film, you can see that he's clearly got the other guys overmatched. Unfortunately, when you play in Wisconsin, there's a lot of guys he's matching up with, a 6-foot guy who's 190 pounds. That makes it really hard to evaluate him. And it also makes it really easy for offensive linemen to get into bad habits, like leaning and stuff like that, because he's able to shove somebody out of the way just because he stood up and put his hands out. That's not going to work at the Big Ten level. And balance is going to be so important in terms of what he's going to have to get down and anchor. Now, that being said, he's dominant at this level. We will not truly know what he is until he's probably got a year in the program here. But I think there's a lot of tools there that you like. And I think that he's a guy who has a really high ceiling. It would not shock me to see him start multiple years at Wisconsin.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, there you go. Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about it on a couple shows ago. I think getting Wisconsin recruits, getting the best players in Wisconsin to come to Wisconsin is exactly step one, right? Cole Reeder, certainly one of the top offensive linemen. Get him. Field, that you've got to fill that room with guys that are local. You can't let these guys go out of state, and this is a good step in the right direction. Let's quickly touch on basketball. The Final Four is set, sadly, Arizona, Michigan, Illinois, two teams that we beat combined 3 times and almost 4. Yeah, that's right. And of course, Duke, our lovely Duke Blue Devils, got smashed up today after early not getting smashed up. They're up 19 points, but a little much deserved, you know, kick in the nuts for Dukies fans, who, one of the most boneheaded plays I've ever seen in my entire life. There's 10 seconds left on the clock. 10 seconds. You have 10 seconds to cross the middle of the court. You don't need to throw it across there, Mr. Caden Boozer, brother of the good Boozer, Cameron Boozer. That was pretty bad. Threw it right to UConn. They get a last second three. Unbelievable. Just the luck that UConn gets. Oh my God. It's shocking. It's insane. But I'm happy that Duke's not in it. It's kind of a bummer, Justin, though, that we beat 2 Final Four teams. I think that's the thing that it still lingers, right? We're still talking about it. Like, I'm still pissed because seeing guys like Michigan, Illinois, Purdue, and of course Iowa advance in the NCAA tournament, makes us look kind of bad, man. It really does. It's rough.
So one thing I will say, you know what else is incredible? There are no ACC and no SEC teams in this left in the tournament. And the Big Ten has two of the four slots. So,
and four of the eight Elite Eight and two of the four slots. Yeah.
Yeah. So
in the Big Ten, the Big Ten's the best conference in the country. And again, we've beaten those teams. Had we just got, do you think for 1 minute that Arizona wanted to see us in the Sweet 16? Hell no. If you are an Arizona fan, you know, you haven't been to a Final Four since 2001. Do you know why? That's right. Sam Decker and Frank Kaminsky. That's why. And also, I mean, certainly in 1999, we eliminated them as the number one seed when we went to the Final Four in 2000. We're a team that we're a killer of Arizona, but it really sucks. We didn't get by High Point. Seeing a team like Iowa go deep has raised questions. Our good buddy Tyler Strieber was sending me something, I don't know, Twitter or Discord or something. And I got several comments about this saying basically, does Ben McCollum getting Iowa to a Final Four in his first season move the needle for me and other people that are guard-in guys like me, that it's still unacceptable that we have a coach that cannot get by the first round? Which, listen, it's a very fair question. And I want your perspective on this, Justin. My retort to that is, first of all, people talk about how Greg Gard went to the Sweet 16 with Bo Ryan's players. Well, Ben McCollum did it with a lot of Fran McCaffrey's players. Not all, because certainly some of those guys are gone. The age is different. He did bring Sturts from Drake. But it's one season. Like, come talk to me in 10 years if Ben McCollum has made every single tournament pretty much and is, you know, a top five seed 3 years in a row. I don't think he's going to do that. And that's the difference with Gard. And yes, he had a great season. Yes, he's a good coach. He's one of those guys that I'm not saying I would turn down McCollum coming to Wisconsin. He's a great coach, did fantastic things at Drake. But I don't necessarily think it moves the needle for me. Does it raise expectations that we have to get by the first round? Obviously, seeing what the Big Ten did and how we're better than some of those teams, that's unfortunate. Like, we had a potential deep run right in front of our face, and we couldn't get by the stupid purple colored 12 seed that we seem to have problems with. But it doesn't really move the needle for me, man. Like, I'm not that bothered by the fact that Iowa did this. I know a lot of people are talking about it, but it does put pressure on him, yes. But it doesn't really move the needle for me.
So where I'll push back on this a little bit is McCollum came into a very different situation than Greg Gard did. Greg Gard came in off a national championship game with the roster that he had.
Okay.
McCollum lost Ducks. He lost Sandefjord. And those were considered to be two of the top scorers on the team coming in. Now, I don't know what that roster looked like. I have not really dug into it. But what I will say is Fran McCaffrey was a guy who was losing in the first round or the second round at best. So it's very different for you to take that and elevate what was being done before versus taking what was there and kind of being able to get close to, if not, I mean, nobody expected Gard to be able to get to beyond the Sweet 16 with that roster, with the players that were lost. Like, Decker and Kaminsky were such a huge part of that roster that it was like, you're not getting back to that spot. You don't have anybody to backfill those two with. And there were numerous other guys who were just really good glue pieces. But yeah, I think it's impressive from that degree. Listen, Iowa doesn't matter to me in this conversation. My reality with this is there's no other way to look at this than you had such an incredible season that the postseason was a failure. It just was. You can say that they had a good regular season and say that the postseason was completely unacceptable. That doesn't mean you're going to fire him, but it does mean you need to say, hey, this has to get better. He is not losing games where he's losing to more talented teams. He is the more talented team, and he's done it multiple times now where he's failed to win the game. He has got to find a way to do that. And that is completely separate from whatever Iowa does. It's completely separate from whatever any other team in the Big Ten does. At some point, the buck stops on you when you have players changing year in, year out, and you're getting similar results whenever you get to the tournament. Like, that's going to fall on you, that you're the common theme there that seems to be an issue. He's got to figure out a way to get beyond that. Maybe he figures out a way to elevate himself. Maybe he doesn't. What I will be really pissed off if I have to watch this from the offseason when he's going after players is seeing him chase guys that are just shooters again, who are limited athletically and are clearly not above average defenders. At some point, stop chasing scoring and start finding some guys who are capable of, I don't care if all they offer is rim running on the offensive end, but I want somebody that can go out on the wing and shut somebody down. Because we have nobody on this roster that's capable of doing that right now, and you need at least one of those guys. You can hide a guy who's not necessarily a big shooter because he'll still be athletic enough to be able to hopefully get to the rim occasionally and be able to – or be able to get down, you know, do some things attacking on putbacks and stuff like that if he's athletic enough.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Very well said. Very well said, all those things. Like, I hear you. And when you lose three times in a row to lower seeded teams, it sucks. It really, really sucks. We should have been in the 316 the last 3 years. And the fact that we did make any of them and didn't get out of the first round twice when we were a five seed, and then we did the three seed and then we couldn't get out of the second round. Like, it's just, it sucks. And it means that, which the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, the first weekend's awesome because of all the madness and the buzzer beaters and everything. But the second weekend is where real basketball happens. And man alive, some of those games were really good. And it sucks that we weren't a part of it. And seeing so many Big Ten teams, six Big Ten teams play this weekend at four of them in the Elite Eight, it sucked. And I think Michigan's going to win the whole thing. I think they're a really good team. And you could argue that we're one of the only teams that beat them all year, right? Illinois could absolutely beat UConn to play the national title game. Illinois against Michigan could be the title game. Two teams that we beat, which sucks.
That'd be nuts.
Maybe it would be nuts.
To end the schneid by the Big Ten and have an all Big Ten game so that one of them has to win would be kind of incredible.
I mean, we ended it now in football for 3 years. It's time we ended it in basketball as well, which is great for the conference. Quickly touching on the roster a little bit, you know, so Greppy's in the transfer portal. Okay. Thanks. Robeson's in the transfer portal. Again, not much there. Great article today on 247 by our good buddy Nick Osen, talking about kind of his thoughts on the portal a little bit, saying he's heard some good vibes from guys like Winter, Rapp, Biliauskas. The question mark remains and is going to remain John Blackwell, who, of course, as we know, is highly regarded by Michigan State. He's a Michigan kid. You know they can pay him. Tom Izzo needs to replace some talent on that team. It is concerning.
Do you think he would go after guard like that?
Yeah, I think he
would. You think he's cutthroat enough that...
Dude, he's not, what, it's not about being cutthroat. John Blackwell's one of the best guards in the country. Why would he not do it? I think that
he's one of the few... He's one of the last vestiges of guys who are like, I'm not going to steal off somebody who I respect's plate.
Yeah, no, man. Those days are over, bro.
Well, that's what I was questioning, because I would say 20 years ago, there's no way he would do it. But now...
Because it's money. It's money at this point. Like, John Blackwell wants money. Wisconsin can pay him, but also then can they pay Winter? Can they pay Rapp? Can they pay other guys? Can they bring in, like,
how much is the budget going up for those guys?
Right. And you mentioned the defensive side of the ball, and Nick also put in that article about how, like, certainly a defensive wing is a priority for them, which, hello, thank you. We need that. Seems like we might not be getting too much more in the front court if we get all those guys back, Winter, Biliauskas, Rapp, which that annoys me.
Sounds like they might be chasing after the Lithuanian kid still.
Yeah.
I like him as a developmental piece. I think he's got some talent, but he's a long way from being able to provide what they look for. And he's not really a fit for what you're looking for anyways, as a guy who can be potentially a rim protector or offer back to the basket. He's got more of it than some of the guys we have. I mean, honestly, you look at the big men we have right now, there's nobody who's really capable of playing with their back to the basket, which is problematic when you're 6'10".
It's extremely problematic, and it matters so much in games, and just in the tournament when you're going through. I always talk about this, like scoring droughts.
They constantly feed the post.
Scoring droughts can be curbed and can be stopped when you can feed the post and you can rely on something that is high percentage to get yourself out of jams. Obviously, look, we can shoot the three with the best of them and we've done that, but please, please get someone who can play with the back to the basket. Please get someone who can be a proper rim protector, can defend our hoop a little bit more and defend our lane a bit more, but we've got to have perimeter defense. And if you're not going to have the rim protector, but you get perimeter defense, I'll take it. I will take the perimeter defender because, man alive, teams are just destroying us on the perimeter because they're like, oh yeah, no problem. I'll just go right by you without having any issue.
Regarding this question from Brian Axness, what is the top priority, wing, point guard, rim protector? The two top, there's two of them for me. You need a point guard with quickness again, because we saw how much that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need a defensive-minded, athletic wing.
Agreed.
And I'm not talking about like a, you know, getting another, who was the guy that played on the wing for us that we got from Minnesota? We need somebody more athletic than that.
Are you talking about Carrington?
Carrington, yes.
Oh, yeah.
You need somebody that is legitimately like looked at as being a versatile athletic player out there. And Wisconsin really hasn't had those guys. I don't know, the last time we had one would probably be Khalil Iverson. You haven't had a guy that's capable of being that kind of, you know, just dominant athlete on the court in a very long time. And Wisconsin badly needs one. It's the biggest weakness on this roster.
The defense matters. Defense really matters. I completely agree with you. Point guard and a defensive-minded wing are the two things we absolutely need. We're probably okay in the front court. Would like a rim protector as a bonus, but, dude, you got to get the guards. And listen, and let's be honest, if you lose John Blackwell, now you've got two guards. You've got your entire starting backcourt that needs to be replaced. Is Kinzinger going to be ready? I don't know. Is Hayden Jones going to play a part there next year? Like, there's a lot of things.
He's going to be able to provide some quality minutes, but I don't want to see him get more than like 15. I don't think he's a starter next year.
Yeah, I agree. God, yeah, dude, it's brutal, but it has to happen, and I think we will. I think the one thing that you can say about Greg Gard is that he has done a good job in the portal. I expect him to do a good job in the portal, and you know, we'll see what happens. We'll leave it there. Justin, any final thoughts before we close the show today?
Well, guys, it is finally getting back to football. So I'm excited that we all get a little bit of a break here before they hit it hard. I believe August 25th is going to be the open practice. April 25th is going to be the open practice. So hopefully we can put something together and get some people down there to hang out. We'll all have to FaceTime Rajiv and taunt him.
Yes, you will. But hey, listen, I might be watching the men's hockey team win a national title in a couple of weeks.
That's fair. That's a good trade-off. Awesome. And hopefully we can get you out here for Lambeau Field.
Yes, that is the plan. That is the plan. Well, I'll leave you today with something I played earlier, but we've got to do it again. The call from Brian Posick on that Frozen Four. Big overtime goal with Wisconsin against Michigan State. Thanks for joining us, and as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Morrissey roughed up. The Badgers hold the zone. Dexheimer shoots one. Score! Badgers score! Ben Dexheimer from out high right and skipped off traffic past Trey Augustine. Oh, I can't believe this. It feels so good to finally see it again. Wisconsin is going to the Frozen Four. The Badgers.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.